This Purim Shir is L'zecha Nishmas, my grandmother, my father's mother, Miriam Penner, Miriam Bas Moshe Tzvi, and my Shver, a blessed memory, Adina's father, Bert Schoenbach, Baruch Gad, Ben Yosef Halevi. There are four mitzvos, as we know, on the day of Purim. The reading of the Megillah, Matanos Levyonim, gifts to the poor, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyehu, and the Seuda of Purim. Wearing costumes and all the shtick that goes along with that is not exactly one of the mitzvos of Purim. And yet, it is a fundamental part, a central part of Purim, and something that we closely associate with the Yom Tov of Purim. The secret is that it's probably not actually a minhag of Purim, and in fact, it's probably not really of Jewish origin. There is no mention anywhere in the Mishnayos, in the Gemara, even in the writings of the Gaonim, about the idea of wearing costumes on Purim. And when it's mentioned in the 1300s, it's mentioned in terms of a question of whether it's allowed, one is allowed to wear such costumes on holidays like Purim and Hanukkah. It has, however, become a central part of the Yom Tov of Purim, of the celebration of Purim. And I will try to explain through this shiur what that connection might be. The earliest sources are found in the Middle Ages, the late Middle Ages. And as I said, the question isn't why we wear costumes on Purim, but if it is permitted. And it seems that these very same costumes were worn at many happy occasions, on Hanukkah, on Purim, at Chasanus. And it's not exactly clear why this started. I would suspect that it started somehow through the surrounding cultures, and that we adopted this custom to also wear costumes as part of our celebrations. In particular, and this is why I think it's pretty clear that this must have started from the surrounding cultures, the custom seemed to have been to dress up as a member of the opposite gender, the opposite sex, something that is, at least on the surface, explicitly usher in the Torah, that a man is not allowed to dress up as a woman, and a woman should not be dressing up as a man. The question is, if that's so, then why did this custom develop within the Jewish community, and particularly, why did it find its way into Purim in particular? And when the rabbis come and they tell us all of these reasons for the customs on Purim, are they justifying the minhag? Are they trying to add meaning to the minhag, to what started perhaps outside of our culture? So let's take a look at some of those sources, and then we'll try to understand how and why HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to have allowed costumes to have become a central part of Purim today, and what the connection might really be between costumes and Purim. The earliest source that we seem to have, as far as costumes and Purim, was from a nephew of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Elazar HaKohen, who was a nephew of the Rosh, living in the 1300s, from Chassidei Ashkenaz. And he writes that this is probably not a good thing, that one should be careful from the lav of lo yilbash gever simlas isha, kigon bachurim hanosnim tse'if beroshehem, like single men who would put a veil on their faces, the lov shim bigdei noshim b'chanaka upurim ube'es nisuin, and they would wear the clothing of women on Hanukkah and on Purim and at the time of weddings. In other words, when there was a sort of a joyous celebration, one of the ways to celebrate that was through wearing women's clothing. So he says, Al tihia ke'echad mehem bedover hara hazeh. He says, don't be one of those guys. Don't be one of those. This is Reuven. Reuven dresses up in women's clothing to celebrate. Don't be Reuven. Vafilu im teaseu l'shem mitzvah, yotza haschar behefsed elef monim. And even if you are doing it for a good purpose, to try to celebrate the Yom Tov, you are losing out much more than you are gaining. The next source, which is probably most famous, is that of the Mahari Mintz, writing in Italy. The Mahari Mintz was blessed with incredibly long life for that time, for the Middle Ages in Italy, lived 100 or more years in Italy. And he too writes that there are those who permit this, but that it's certainly better to avoid the wearing of costumes. But in particular, of course, he's talking about costumes which involved cross-dressing of some sort. It's very clear from his tshuva that this is not limited to Purim. Many of his sources don't mention Purim specifically, and that this wasn't simply a Purim thing to dress up in costumes, and it wasn't even about wearing costumes in general. It was a particular custom to celebrate in joyous, kind of boisterous celebrations with this kind of women's clothing. The Ramah famously permits this. The Ramah writes in Tafresh Tzadivav Hey, Tafresh Tzadivav Ches, Mashinagu Lilbosh, Partsufim Bipurim, that which there's a custom to wear costumes on Purim, the Gever Lovesh Simlas Isha, and a man wears a woman's clothing, Ein Iser Bedover. He says it's not prohibited. It's Purim. They're not looking to dress like the opposite sex per se. Everybody knows it's a costume. It's just part of the fun, and it's not a problem. Of course, even though the Ramah was matir, many, including the Taz and others, felt that it was better to stay away. It's better to stay away, perhaps not a true violation of the Torah prohibition to dress as the opposite sex, but things stay calmer and better, and we stay away from Avera when men dress like the men and the women dress like the women. It's a little bit of an Archie Bunker there, where it's probably good to for the men to dress like the men and the women to dress like the women to avoid any concerns and challenges. The question is, as years went on and this custom seemed to become centered more around Purim, so we developed rabbinic opinions as to perhaps why, at least on Purim, it was not only okay to dress in costumes, but it was perhaps even something that is in the spirit of the holiday. Some suggested the custom eventually became to wear the clothes of non-Jews, to dress up in particularly non-Jewish type of garb. And some suggest that it was an inyan of ad d'lo yada. You're not supposed to be able to tell the difference between Haman and Mordechai. So we should dress up that day more like Haman than Mordechai. Sichas Chachamim gives a very interesting explanation, perhaps a very beautiful explanation, that one of the reasons why the rabbis supported the wearing costumes was to protect the identities of the poor. To protect the identities of the poor. That this way, if a person came up to you on Purim, they shouldn't have to be embarrassed. They just dressed in a costume. You're supposed to generally know to whom you're giving tzedakah. The halacha is you're really supposed to know to whom you're giving tzedakah. You're not supposed to give them, the nth degree of a check, but you're supposed to be responsible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us money to distribute. He's given us part of the money that he gives us. We're supposed to be distributing to the poor, but we're not supposed to be distributing it in a manner that is frivolous, in a manner that is irresponsible. So on Purim, the halacha is that I'm not supposed to necessarily ask. Kol haposhet yad. Anybody who sticks out their hand on Purim, we're supposed to give to. And therefore, even if the person is covered with a mask, it's not a problem. The reality is, just to take an aside, that it's probably valuable for us to take more of a Purim approach to tzedakah than a non-Purim approach. It's interesting that I recommend to people to take a similar approach to the way they use mitzvah money or mitzvah geld, right? To the money that they get, the shliach mitzvah, when they go to Eretz Yisrael. Do you ever notice that when you're given shliach mitzvah money to give out at the kotel, so you're very, very eager to give it out to the first person that comes to you? I know I'm that way. I don't want to lose the money. I don't want to get it confused with my own money. So I'm very eager. I see somebody, I'm very excited to hand them the money. Well, that's because it's not my money. I've been given it by somebody else to give away, and therefore I don't feel such a need to check them out so much. It's interesting that when it's my money, or at least I believe that it's my money, when it's money actually coming out of my wallet, suddenly I take a little bit more of a suspicious approach, circumspect approach to people that come to me. Is that really because I'm trying to be responsible with the money, or because I'm looking for an excuse not to part with my money? So perhaps if we took the understanding that as tzedakah, tzedakah is from the root of tzedek, that it's really not mine. It really, in fact, is, it's not a gift that I'm giving to somebody from my money. A certain portion of my money is intended for the poor. And therefore, I should give it away. I should feel, even as I'm giving it away, that I'm not giving away my money. Yes, I have to be responsible. But anyway, certainly on Purim, a person is supposed to be very, very giving. A person is supposed to give even if I'm not sure if the person is worthy. And therefore, it was perfectly understandable that everyone should dress up in costumes and an ani should be able to approach me and stick out his hand without revealing his identity. Many, of course, tie the fact that we wear costumes, we wear masks on Purim, to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, wore a mask for the course of the Megillah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hidden hand. And just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu wore a mask and hid himself, the miracles in the Purim story are hidden miracles. So therefore, we too should wear a mask. But if we think about it, masks and costumes play a very central role in the Megillah. And while the custom may not have started as a minhag of Purim, suggesting perhaps it did come from elsewhere, it certainly makes sense that the use of masks should flow from the Megillah and flow into the holiday of Purim. But to understand that, we have to understand truly what a mask is. So many characters in the Megillah wear costumes of one sort or another. The reality is that we all do. We all wear different kinds of masks. Now, masks until recently were associated with doctors, with baseball catchers, with construction workers. But now we've all had a chance to wear masks. We've all had a chance to understand what it means to cover our faces and to realize what a difference it makes when our faces are covered. But the reality is that even long before the pandemic, we all were wearing some sort of a mask. And even if it wasn't a physical face covering, we were certainly wearing some sort of a covering and something that we were hoping would project something about ourselves to others. Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, of blessed memory, in his Sefer called Simple Words, talks about what it means that we're all really wearing a mask. He writes that our masks change as we develop through the stages of life. Once we are grown, we wear professional masks at work, at home. We wear the mask of a parent, a spouse. Some masks include a complete change of attire. In fact, almost all attire is a mask, implying a role. I am an enticing young lady. I am a serious person. I am going on a business trip. I am going for a leisurely stroll. In each case, I wear the proper dress for that occasion. My attire proclaims what I am. Now I am a businessman. The soldier, the police officer, the corporate executive, and the street sweeper all dress for their parts. And he writes that not only do we change masks for the various activities of our daily lives, we also change masks with different people. We have many masks, he writes, and we are capable of changing them remarkably fast. Now, don't get me wrong. Rabbi Steinsaltz makes it clear that masks are important to wear. We wouldn't be able to function without masks. Some of our masks are more important than others. Some hide and some reveal. We all go from mask to mask throughout our day, from personality to personality. And we use clothing, we use facial expressions, we use the way that we hold ourselves to represent something about ourselves or to hide something about ourselves. The question is not so much if we wear a mask, but which mask shall we wear when? And do we recognize after wearing masks for so long that we are still wearing them? What is that line between wearing a mask intentionally and the moment when a mask becomes so much a part of our face that we don't know we're wearing it anymore? Ralph Lee, the American puppeteer and designer, is about 80, mid-80s right now, asks a very interesting question. Does a mask hide certain aspects of the wearer? Or does a mask give a person the freedom and the responsibility to become something or someone else. It's interesting that sometimes we see someone on Purim and we feel that the mask, that the costume that they're wearing actually gives them the ability to reflect their true selves. There are some of us who are more ourselves when we wear a mask, when we wear a costume. Which costume do we choose? How do we act when we're wearing that costume? Does the costume give us the ability to reflect a side of ourselves deep down that we're afraid to show? Masks are things that we sometimes don't even understand. We place on masks intentionally, and we sometimes leave them on and forget to take them off. The reality is that there are many, many masks in Megillas Esther, and almost every character in Megillas Esther pretends to be someone else, hides a part of their identity, acts in a certain way in front of others. It's not that all of the characters in Megillas Esther are evil, but they are all at one point or another, for various reasons, they need to wear a mask. They need to say something about themselves that isn't necessarily true. It starts, according to Chazal, right at the beginning of the Megillah. This bizarre party, this tremendous party, this show put on by Ahasuerus himself, 180 days. Why is he putting on a show? It's clear that that's what it is. It's not simply an opportunity to celebrate. It's a show. The Megillah begins with someone who, according to Chazal, is not legitimately a king. Someone whose ancestors worked in the stables. Someone who's not from the royal line, who wants to look like a king, who wants to maintain his position as the king. And therefore, he puts on a show, he runs a party, and he pretends, he puts on the clothing, so to speak, of a king. At the end of that party, according to Chazal, he dresses up as something else. He puts on the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, which had made its way to Babylonia and then to Persia. But he's not the only one who is wearing a mask at the party. Vashti is wearing a mask at the party, or at least she's been wearing a mask until the party. She, according to Chazal, hated Ahasuerus. She was a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, and she had absolutely no respect for Ahasuerus. But until that point, she had played the role of the good queen. She had played the role of the subservient queen and wife to Ahasuerus. It's actually at the party when Vashti is asked to take off her clothing that she takes off her mask, and she refuses to be part of this charade. She refuses any longer to play that role which she never wanted to play in the first place. Most importantly, there are many, many other people at the party who are wearing masks, and those are, I would suggest, the Jews of Shushan. The Jews of Shushan who were doing their best to fit in. The Jews of Shushan who found themselves perhaps finally being accepted in a faraway land. Exiles, immigrants, who were finally making their way into the king's palace, who were wearing the masks, making them look just like everybody else. Was it wrong for them to be wearing such masks? Should they have had their yarmulkes and their payas and their tzitzis out at the party? Perhaps not, although we'll see that according to the Gemara, that may have somehow been tied into the reason for the terrible things that happened to them. But you have an entire party where the question of shall I wear a mask, shall I not wear a mask, a king who's pretending to be a king, a queen who stops pretending that she's going to be just a queen, and an audience which contains in it the most important members, the Jewish people, who are pretending to be citizens of the empire, even as the party heats up. Even as he begins to wear the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, even as he brings out the cups, according to Chazal, of the Beis Hamikdash and starts drinking wine from them, they remain undercover. They remain simply part of the crowd. Soon after, there's another person who begins to wear a mask, and that is Haman, who, according to Chazal, is Mimuchan. Mimuchan The advisor of the king pretends to be the greatest supporter of the king. Of course, we know that he had much else in mind. Memuchan Haman was looking for his own power, but so often someone who is the second in charge is able to play with the mind of a paranoid leader. Rabbi Soloveitchik, of course, famously explained that Ahasuerus was not stupid, he was not crazy, he was paranoid. Who else would say that if you show up and knock on his door without an invitation, you will be summarily killed? Haman was able to play on the paranoia of Ahasuerus, able to convince Ahasuerus that he had nothing in mind except the good of Ahasuerus, that he wanted to get rid of the Jewish people because he was helping out the king and helping out the empire rather than for his own devices and his own purposes. Haman is wearing a mask as well. The beauty contest that follows, the sick beauty contest that follows, where every girl needs to be with the king, she pretends as well. She spends 6 months wearing the mask, becoming the image of a queen, so that she can now be with the king. Every single one of the girls spends 6 months converting herself, sitting in a spa, trying to become a queen, even though she is but a commoner, but trying to look like a queen in front of Ahasuerus. Mordechai as well, never reveals his connection to Esther. No one knows, seems to know his prominence. Bigson and Seresh don't seem to understand that he knows their language, doesn't seem to understand that he's listening. He hides who he truly is. They probably knew he was Jewish. That seems to be something that he's hiding. And we'll get to understand in a little bit the extent to which Mordechai does or doesn't hide himself. But it's Mordechai as well who is somehow undercover. He, of course, will wear multiple costumes throughout the Megillah, wearing sackcloth, then being dressed up by Haman in the clothes of the king, eventually coming out with his own royal clothing when he becomes the second to Ahasuerus. Are these masks, or do they represent his true self? Who is the real Mordechai, the one wearing the sackcloth, or the one wearing the king's clothing? Esther, of course, covers up who she is. She covers up who her background. She doesn't tell Ahasuerus. No matter what Ahasuerus tries to do, she will not take off her mask, her cloak of anonymity. Eventually, she does dress Vatilbash Esther Machut. She too puts on a costume. She too dresses up as a queen. But of course, Chazal tell us, where do we find Esther in the Torah? Vanochi Aster Asteres Panai Bayom Ahu. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I will hide my face in that day. The word Esther means that which is hidden. And this hiddenness works its way throughout the Megillah till the moment when Charvona exclaims that Haman should be hung on the tree. Rabbis tell us that Charvona is Eliyahu dressing up as one of the servants of the king. So many of the characters in the Megillah are wearing costumes, are changing clothing, are not exactly whom they seem to be. Of course, the one who is most hidden during the story and whose hand is not even revealed by the end is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is masked. He's not named in the Megillah. Haman seems to play on this by choosing through a random goral when the Jews should be killed. Everything, says Haman, is chance, and everything, of course, is directed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is masked throughout the Megillah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. The mask is difficult to remove. The costume called this world. Our rabbis tell us that the word olam, the world, is from the root Aleph Lamed Mem, which means to hide. This entire world is a place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses to hide. There are miracles around us, but he makes them difficult to see because he covers them, he covers himself with a mask. But the core of the Megillah is not simply about the masks that we wear, but the masks that become part of our identity. Perhaps the reason why we wear masks on Purim is not so much to cover ourselves, but to remind ourselves that we are often wearing masks, sometimes intentionally, but sometimes those masks need to be removed. Perhaps the masks that we put on Purim are meant to be taken off, even if they were originally put on, to save our lives. We can all relate to the concept of masks that were placed on in order to save our lives. Are we comfortable to take them off? We shouldn't be comfortable if the medical science doesn't support it, but if we are healthy and we have been vaccinated and medical science says that it's time to take off the masks, are we able to? Are we able to remove a mask, or has a mask become such a part of our identity? Has a barrier been placed between us and everyone around us that it's difficult to know when it's time to take off the mask? Perhaps the earliest source of masks and Purim can actually be found in the Gemara itself, although it doesn't speak of a mask, but of an identity that was difficult to shed. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that the students of Rav Shimon bar Yochai approached their Rebbe, and they said to their Rebbe, why is it that the Jewish people had to suffer through this life-threatening situation of Purim? Why would the Jews all around the empire have to face this incredible threat that their lives should be put on the line? They had to fight for their lives. Interestingly, Rav Shimon bar Yochai says to them, what do you think? It's a very unusual time in the Talmud where the Rebbe says back to the student, I don't know, you tell me. The students suggest that the reason why they had to go through this horror was because they benefited from the Seuda of Ahasuerus. They were at the meal with Ahasuerus. They enjoyed. They had no right being there. They shouldn't have been there. Says Rav Shimon bar Yochai, good point, students. But if so, that only involved the Jews of Shushan. The decree was uttered against every Jew in the empire. What was it that every Jew in the empire did? So they said to him, you're right, Rebbe. So you tell us the answer. And the Heiliger of Shimon bar Yochai says to his students, it was because they bowed down to an idol, to an image. Doesn't say what image this was. The Maharsha points out that you could have thought that this image was the image that Chazal say was around the neck of Haman. Haman wore an idol around his neck, and he asked people to bow down to him and effectively bow down to the idol. But the Maharsha says that can't be what it means, because that too would only involve the Jews of Shushan. We need something that involved a much wider cross-section of the Jews than something that occurred in Shushan. And therefore, Rashi suggests that it was in fact not the idol of Haman, but the huge structure mentioned in the book of Daniel, which was built by Nebuchadnezzar the Babylonian. Nebuchadnezzar made an enormous statue representing the power of the Babylonian Empire, and everyone in the empire was supposed to bow down. Several Jews didn't. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah didn't. But the vast majority, it seems, did bow down. And since they bowed down to this idol, they deserved to be destroyed. So said Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai to his students. The students then responded, but Rebbe, if they in fact bowed down to this idol, so then why weren't they actually killed? It may have been an Avodah Zarah, it may not have been Avodah Zarah, but certainly the Jew has no place bowing down to a huge idol, even if it represents the power of the Babylonians. So why didn't they actually get killed? Explains Rav Shimon bar Yochai that in fact, they only bow down on the outside. They didn't bow down on the inside. He explains that the Jews at the time knew they only did so because they were afraid. There was nothing inside of them. Their outsides bowed down. Their bodies may have bowed down, but their minds, their souls, their allegiance was always to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They only sinned on the outside. They didn't sin on the inside. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only punished them on the outside, a threat, a scare that would never come to fruition. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created what seemed to be an image, a mask of terror and horror for the Jewish people. And yet on the inside, it was really never meant to happen. So says the Gemara in Megillah, that the first mask was the mask that the Jewish people wore when they were at the Seuda of Ahasuerus. When they were at the event with Nebuchadnezzar, and it was the same thing, and that's why I said the Seuda of Ahasuerus, that the Jews did when they were at that meal with the king as well. In fact, what the students of Rav Shimon bar Yochai suggested to their Rebbe was very, very similar to the answer that he gave. He gave the example of a number of Jews who didn't know what to do when everyone started bowing down to this idol. They didn't want to be part of it. They didn't want to have a role there, but they bowed down because they were afraid, because they didn't want to stand out. Perhaps the same thing happened at the meal with Ahasuerus. The Jews were there. The Jews had a reason to be there. The Jews had finally made it in Persian society. The Jews were involved in politics. The Jews were involved in many things. Perhaps they had no reason not to be at that Seuda. But at some point in that Seuda, Ahasuerus comes out with the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Ahasuerus comes out with the Kelim from the Beis HaMikdash. And it was at that point that the Jews needed to shed their identity. They needed to shed their identity as citizens of the empire, and they needed to show their identity as Jews. It was okay for them to be part of the party. They didn't need to go there with their payas flopping on the side of their heads. But when things turned, when being a member of that party, when being a member of the Ahasuerus party meant frolicking in front of the big day Kohen Gadol, when it meant drinking from the cups, from the kelim, from the Beis HaMikdash, it's at that point that they needed to say, I have to take off this mask. I can't pretend anymore to be just one of the citizens of the empire. The very same thing that the Jews faced when bowing down. It was okay to try to fit in Nebuchadnezzar's empire, but when he asked everyone to bow down to that huge idol, at that point, the Jews were expected to rip off their masks, to say, I'm not like everybody else. I cannot do this. What the students had suggested to Rav Shimon bar Yochai had happened within Shushan. Rav Shimon bar Yochai said, yes, but the very same thing had happened to Jews in a cross-section of the empire years before. The Jews were wearing masks, and it was okay for them to be wearing masks. It's okay for the Jew to try to fit in. It's okay and recommended that a Jew be part of society. The question is, when is it time to take off my mask? Was it that the Jews at the time were completely just afraid to take off their mask? Were they caught flat-footed, realizing that they had been wearing a mask for so long and unable to figure out exactly how to get it off their faces at the moment of truth? This was at the core of the story of Purim, and the core, according to Chazal, of why all of these things had to happen. Because the Jew wore a mask, and the Jew wasn't willing to remove that mask when it came time to do so. The story, of course, reaches its height in the fourth chapter of the Megillah. It's there that the Gzeira of Haman has become clear. It's there that the Jews of Shushan, who didn't see anything coming, who thought that they were settled in Shushan and everything was going to be fine, were suddenly taken, suddenly found themselves at the bad end, at the wrong end of a rifle. But the Jews themselves do not know how to react. Perek Dalet begins, U'Mordechai Yadas Kol Asher Nasa, Vayobash, Mordechai decides to wear sackcloth. Is everyone else wearing sackcloth? It seems not at the beginning. Mordechai is the one who suddenly takes off his royal clothes, who takes off the clothes that those who were around the palace wore, the fancy clothes, and he says, that's it. We can no longer pretend to just be citizens of the empire. The empire wants to kill us. The empire, the king has just come out with a decree to kill us. We need to take off our clothes. And he screams, Vayizak za'aka gedola umara. He screams. It's no surprise that Mordechai is the one who leads this call. If you look back in Perek Bet, the first mention of Mordechai mentions the fact, as soon as it says that he lived in Shushan HaBirah, it mentions after Pasuk Hey, it mentions in Pasuk Vav, Asher Hagla Miyushalayim, Imagola Asher Haglasa. It mentions immediately that even though Mordechai found himself in the palace, Mordechai at his core was a refugee from Yerushalayim. Mordechai always felt like a refugee from Yerushalayim. He always understood who he was. Even as he stood, even as he stayed around the palace, even as he rose to a position of prominence, somehow the Megillah tells us from the very, very beginning, Mordechai always remembers who he is. He is the first to don the sackcloth. He's the first to say, we've pretended for long enough. It's time to speak out. The Jew has struggled with this. The Jew struggles with this when at the same time he's trying to fit into an alien society, but he needs to express his Jewishness in order to save himself and his people. The Jews struggle with this in World War II. How much should they step out of their good American costume? And it wasn't just a costume, it was an identity. We were good Americans. How much and to what extent should we protest because Jews were dying in Europe? Is it better for us just to stay silent, to stay as members of the empire? Or do we need to somehow speak out? Do we need to wear sackcloth? It is Mordechai who comes to that conclusion that it is time to change who we are, to scream loudly and clearly, we are refugees, we don't belong here, and we are not safe here. What is the response of Esther? Vatischalchal hamakamaot. Esther can't understand. What's going on? Is it that she just hadn't heard anything about the decree? It doesn't seem so, because it seems that even when she hears of the decree, she isn't necessarily running in to take action. Esther is of the opinion, it seems, that we shouldn't wear sackcloth at the gates of the king, even if we are in danger. And what a change, what a dramatic change that is in the personality of Esther. And this I want to focus, listen clearly. The encounter between Esther and Mordechai in the fourth chapter of the Megillah is the turning point of the Megillah. My Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal would speak every Tainus Esther about this particular perek and this particular exchange. The perek begins with the Jew as victim. The perek begins with Mordechai and the Jewish people wearing sackcloth, and it ends with Esther taking action and moving to save her people. Yes, it's true that it's in the beginning of chapter 6 that things change on the ground. Balayla hahu na didash nas hamelech, the sleep of the king with a capital K is interrupted, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins to do things. But that only happens, of course, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set a lot of things in motion already, has prepared the groundwork, but more importantly, that happens when Esther takes it upon herself. When the human being acts, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts. How do we get from point A to point B? What's happened to Esther? Why is she unable to hear Mordechai at first, and what changes? It's remarkable to look at Esther, not the queen, but Esther who was kidnapped and taken to the palace. All of the other women in the palace are interested in wearing a costume. Shisha chadashim b'shevan amor v'shisha chadashim b'av samim. They get anything they want in order to appear more beautiful in front of the king. But by Esther it says, Lo viksha davar. She wants nothing. She wants to go into the king as she is. Now you might argue she was trying to throw the contest. She was hoping to lose. Who would want to end up stuck with that buffoon as a husband? But as we can see clearly from the Megillah, all of the girls went back to the harem after spending time with the king. The question wasn't whether or not someone was going to spend the rest of their life in the palace. It was whether they would do so as one of the girls in the harem or as the queen. We don't have any reason to believe that Esther was trying to throw her chances at this beauty contest. It seems that Esther was more comfortable than anyone else with who she was. Now, of course, Esther hid her identity. Esther did not tell Ahasuerus or anyone else in the palace who she was, but it is so interesting that the Megillah tells us particularly that why did she do that? Because that's what Mordechai told her to do. Why is it that the Megillah needs to tell us that Mordechai instructed her to cover over her identity? What would she have done otherwise? It seems that the Esther who entered into the palace was more comfortable than anyone else in the Megillah in revealing her identity, in being herself, in not looking to wear a costume. But one of the most difficult things to understand about the Megillah is how much time takes place during the Megillah itself. How much time passes between Esther in chapter 2 and Esther in chapter 4. 9 years pass. And during that time, it seems that Esther may have become the queen. Esther may have become more comfortable with the persona of being the queen of Persia to the extent that she may have forgotten that she was wearing a mask. The very same Esther who wants to potentially go into the kingdom, who's potentially willing to say who she is, she's the one who says to Mordechai, how can you be wearing the sackcloth in public? Mazeh v'al mazeh, what exactly is going on? Is this the same Esther who entered the palace? Is this the same person that she was before she put on that mask 9 years before? I would suggest that it isn't. And the proof is from the words of Mordechai to her. Even when she knows that there is a decree against the Jews, Esther says, I cannot and will not go into the king. Everybody knows that's crazy. Says Mordechai in the famous words that turn the whole Megillah, Al tadami v'nafsheich lihimaleit beit hamelech mikol hayudim. Don't imagine, Esther, that you will be able to hide in the king's palace and not suffer the fate of the rest of the Jews. What is it that he's telling her? I believe that what Mordechai is telling her is that she has now forgotten that she has been wearing a costume. She's been wearing a mask. She's assumed the identity of the queen of Persia. And that mask, like all other masks, whether we know that we're wearing them anymore, will eventually be removed. Do you think you're the queen of Persia? You're a Jewish girl. You're a Jewish girl. And that is the core of who you are, as it being a Jewish man has always been the core of who I am. And we need to know when to take off the mask. We need to know when to pull off the mask of being just a good part of society. There are times when when the situation requires us to take off our masks and say, no, I am not like everybody else. No, I refuse to wear this mask anymore. And the mask is not a bad thing. The Jew is supposed to be part of society. And in order to be part of society, the Jew needs to wear a mask to some extent. But the Jew needs to know when it's time to take off the mask. The Jew needed to take off the mask before bowing to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. The Jew needed to take off the mask at the moment that Ahasuerus came out in the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. And you, Esther, you need to take off your mask now. Im acharesh tacharishi be'es hazos revach v'hatzala yamod la'yudim mimakom acher. Kadosh Baruch Hu will save the Jewish people. Va'atu beit avich tovedu. But you are a descendant of King Shaul. You're a Jew. You're an important Jew. You're the daughter of royalty. That's what will be lost. If you don't show your face now, then that part of you and the legacy of your family will be lost forever. Lech Knosis Kol HaYudim. Esther understands. She asks that the Jews be brought together. V'tzumu olai v'al tishtu v'al tochlu v'al tishtu. Of course, in Rabbi Soloveitchik's famous analysis, she doesn't do what Mordechai told her. The role of the male, the role of the Mordechai is to inspire action, but his ideas are not particularly good in how to get it done. The role of the woman is to understand how to, once inspired, be able to figure out how to nurture that idea, how to bring it to fruition. She doesn't go into the king immediately, as Mordechai has said. Instead, she hatches a plan, a terrific plan that works. And now she will go into the king on her own terms. It's so interesting that the fifth chapter begins, Vayi bayom ha-shlishi vatilbash Esther Malchut. Now she puts on the costume of being a queen. What do you mean? What did she wear on a typical day as the queen? We don't know. But one thing we do know is that now she is wearing the garments of the queen as a costume. She understands. She's taken off her mask and now is intentionally putting it back on to play a role. She understands that, as Mordechai had told her, Umi yodea im la'ez kazos higa'at la malchut, maybe, who knows, this is why you became the queen. She's suddenly aware that she's not really the queen. The queen is a role that's been given to her, that's been overlaid over her Jewish soul, and that gives her the opportunity, perhaps, to save her people. And remarkably, Esther spends the rest of the Megillah uncovering the masks of everyone around her. She first uncovers the mask of Haman, showing him for what he is. Then she uncovers the mask of Mordechai, because she explains to Achashverosh Mahullah. And she is able to uncover the masks of Jewish people around the empire as the Jewish people gather and they remove their masks and they say, we are one of you, but we're not. As Rabbi Soloveitchik would say, Ger v'toshav anochi. I am a toshav, but right now I need to be a ger. Right now I need to recognize that I am not the same as you. If you threaten my life, I need to rise up against you. In an ironic twist, the people of the empire never saw the masks of the Jews. They always saw through those masks, and now the Jews had to take off, had to rip off their masks in order to be able to tell themselves that they were Jews. She eventually takes off the mask of Haman and his sons, who are shown in front of the entire empire to be the traitors that they are. Once Esther learns the secret of removing her own mask, she is able to remove the masks of everyone around her, and she is able to reveal even the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by saving the Jewish people. The Megillah ends with a very, very anticlimactic conclusion. Vayosem HaMelech Achashverosh Mas, that Achashverosh levies a tax. He had given everybody a tax break during the at the party when he declares Esther to be queen, and now he reinstates the tax. And it's such a strange ending to the Megillah. It is so anticlimactic. The world goes back behind its mask. That's what happens. The world goes behind its mask. It's interesting, and I don't know if there's any grammatical truth to this, but the word for mask can be masecha. The first two letters are the same as mas, as that of a tax. At the end of the Megillah, the world puts back on its mask, because the world will continue to wear a mask, and the Jewish people become part of the empire. Perhaps they missed a chance, as some would suggest, to go to Eretz Yisrael and to take off their masks once and for all. But perhaps the message at the end of the Megillah is that it's okay to wear masks as long as we know when to take them off. It's okay to have every day. It's okay to, at least as long as we're in this long gullus, it's okay to become citizens of the empire. We're supposed to pay taxes. We're supposed to be part of the countries that we live in. But we have to remember that at the end of the day, it's a mask. At the end of the day, it's part of who we are, but it's certainly not the entirety of who we are. We don't call this special book the Book of Esther. Instead, it's called Megillat Esther. What do those two words mean? The word Megillat is from the word Megaleh, to reveal. The word Esther is that which is hidden. The name of this special book that we read on Purim is The Revealing of That Which Is Hidden. The revealing of the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the revealing, helping to reveal for Esther who she was, so that she could allow everyone else, including HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be revealed through the course of the Megillah. Rabbosai, we live in a time in a very, very difficult world where we're beginning to take off our masks. And we do so cautiously, but we do so with medical advice. It's March of 2022. The pandemic has raged for 2 years. And for most of us, we have safely removed our masks. But have we? The masks of cloth, the masks of paper, those are easy to see and easy to remove. Though even those, we've all had times where we ripped off our mask the second that we went outside or the second that we got away from strangers back to our family. But we all know that even those masks, there were times where we wore them accidentally for much longer than we had to. Now that we have taken off those masks, we have to ask ourselves, are there still barriers that are left between us and those around us? The pandemic changed the way that we looked at our neighbors and even our fellow Jews. Every person around us became a potential threat, a danger, someone who could perhaps pose a threat to our life. Those masks, the masks that are psychological masks, the mask where we say, where we look at people first as a threat, a mask where we look at a person and we naturally judge them. Are they wearing their mask? Are they not wearing their mask? Did they get vaccinated? Did they not get vaccinated? Those are masks that have placed barriers between us and our family members, perhaps, and certainly those who are outside our family and those who are in the community. We have, many of us, and again, safely taken off the masks made of material. But have we removed the psychological mask, the trauma that we've been through for the last few years? Have we become sort of more to ourselves? Have we become more concerned just with ourselves? Have we begun to look at other people as a problem, as a difficulty, rather than as our brothers and sisters, rather than as an opportunity to gather together? We need, at this time of Megillas Esther, to ask ourselves, what are the masks that remain? What are the barriers that have been put up? Are we davening together, or are we davening still separated? Are we celebrating together, or are we now much more concerned just with our own family and our own doings? Those masks need to come off. Trauma is real. And the trauma of having gone through several years of the pandemic is absolutely real. And it's not easy to look and to see and to understand after 2 years what's happened to us. But we have to recognize that many, many masks have been placed over our faces. Many, many masks have been placed over the smiles that we once gave to people when we saw them. May this Purim be a time when we are Megala the Hester, that the people that we are deep down were able and were willing to share that again, that we see other people as an opportunity to extend ourselves and not as a danger that somehow will hurt ourselves. We live in very difficult times, and the shir should also be a zchus somehow for the safety of all of our brothers and sisters who are in the Ukraine, all our brothers and sisters who may be fighting on behalf of a country that they no longer agree with in Russia, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remove his mask. It seems like a time where it's very hard to see the face of Hashem playing out in the world. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu be Megala that Hester upon him. May he pull the mask off of his own face. And may we see together, in person, all the Jewish people in Yerushalayim, v'mehera v'yameinu. Afrei lechem Purim to all.